I'm a dance dad. Right up to COVID, my daughter used to dance. Again, when you think about gender, that was a fascinating job. I took her to dancing just because I was a teacher, which meant I was free on the weekends. But whenever I would get there, it would be me with all these moms.
This is Writer's Mosaic in Conversation. Bashabi Fraser talks to Fode Mana about his debut novel, The Search for Othello Savage.
Welcome, Fode, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Bashabi, and thank you so much for having me.
Before we talk about your novel, could you tell us about your own background and how you see your journey as a writer? I know that you were born in Britain. You did go back to your home country for your education. You had more of an education when you came back here, so lots of degrees. And now you're an established Scottish writer.
Well, yes, well, I'm not too sure about the established, but definitely a writer. Yeah, I am a child of two societies in the sense, I think back in the day, what tended to happen was people who came from the diaspora, more or less people who came from like Africa and Asia. I think the thinking was you came to Europe and studied, but the thinking was you always went back to the home country to give back. I think that's exactly what happened with my parents, in the sense that we were born in London, but we went back to Sierra Leone in the late 70s. And so I went through primary school, high school and university in Sierra Leone. But after I finished university, then I decided to come back to the UK. Stayed briefly in London, but didn't quite like it. So moved up to Scotland and I've stayed here ever since. And now I work as a teacher in a high school. Yeah.
And your journey as a writer?
Well, writing was something I always did. I think the origins of it came again from high school. I went to an all-boys boarding school. And when we got to S6, we decided to more or less establish a newspaper. So the origins of my writing were actually non-fiction. So the newspaper was called the Satellite Newspaper. The thinking was more kind of like a metaphor. A satellites more or less observe everything and report them in terms of news. So what we tended to do was more or less a bit of a rag, and it was very basic in the extreme, in the sense that it involved handwriting articles on a big sheet of paper, and then we put the paper inside a glass notice board for people to read. So that's more or less what it started. And then from then, when I came to the UK, I remember doing a degree in international conflict and cooperation. And I think I was a bit restless, and I just thought, what else could I do a degree in? And I just thought, well, actually, maybe creative writing. So I did the degree, and then from the degree, of course, part of the degrees you're expected to produce pieces, and then that finished, and then of course the pieces get sent off, and eventually one of my ideas was picked up for a novel. Yes.
That sounds marvelous.
Thank you.
You make it sound very easy, but I'm sure it hasn't been easy, especially because of what you want to write and how you want to be perceived as a writer. Am I right?
Yes, I think the industry in general, I think it's very complicated. It's not easy to access at all. And I found that I think when I, for example, I got the degree in 2014, 2015, it took about 5 years for me to be shortlisted for a short story prize. The way I looked at it, I think many people, when they come into writing, I think the ultimate dream is to get a novel and to get an agent. But I was a bit different. I remember going to Philadelphia in 2004. And a friend taking me to a nightclub. And in the nightclub, there were quite a lot of rappers who wanted to become more or less established rappers. And what they tended to do was they released things called mixtapes, which were like CDs of their music. What the mixtapes did was more or less it would generate some kind of interest and a bit of buzz before the album came out later. So I took that same thinking. I thought to myself, okay, let's put the novel to one side for now and focus on, for example, short pieces. And that's what I did. So more or less, I wrote quite a lot of short stories. The other thing about short stories, Bashabi, when you think about it, the clue is in the name. A short story competition, for example, might be 2,500 words or 3,000 words. So I started to enter quite a lot of short story competitions, Manchester Short Story, Bristol, Commonwealth, Bridport. And I started to get quite a lot of success in quite a few of them. So
you've been shortlisted for
quite a few. Exactly. So that gave me the validation and the momentum to more or less think, well, actually, this is something I can build on. So before I even started to query agents and to try and get more or less published, I'd already established this kind of foundation with short stories. And then from then, of course, it went from there.
Wonderful. Would you like to share at least one of your short stories with us before we move on to the search for Othello Savage?
Yeah, I wrote. Yeah, I think when you think about it, of course, I wrote Yellow Woman. My father died in 2016, so in Sierra Leone, January 2016. And that's okay. So it was a case of going back to Sierra Leone, and it was just in the aftermath of the Ebola epidemic. And so there was this consciousness. So you think about more or less when you get to Sierra Leone, one of the things you do is more or less shake people's hands to sympathize with you. And I remember everybody saying, no, you can't shake people's hands because even though Ebola is finished, but there's still the vestiges of it in the background. So I remember seeing this giant poster. It was more or less advertising the precautions to take when it came to Ebola. And what stood out was the fact there was a woman on the poster and she had this yellow hazmat suit on. And the thinking was more or less, a particular woman who was presented as more or less being an outlier, because the thinking was that such a grim task should not be undertaken by women. It should more or less be a man's job to deal with death. So I used that as a foundation to write a short story about this woman who is the only member of an Ebola team who go to retrieve dead bodies. So, for example, somebody dies from the disease, they call the center and then they go and take the bodies. This was a true task. So I more or less used her as a conduit, more or less, where you have this yellow woman and she becomes a kind of like a mythical figure, the woman who turns up wearing yellow to take away these dead bodies. And she becomes ostracized in her area where she lives. Her husband leaves her and the husband takes the child with her because more or less she's doing things that are considered not to be feminine. So that was more or less a short story I wrote. So in the story, of course, it's a typical day in her life. When they get the call, she wakes up in the morning, they get the ambulance, they go collect a dead body and they take the dead body to more or less where it has to be disposed of. But it's more or less within that she also gets interviewed by a journalist from overseas who follows them along. So that was more or less what I did.
It's about, again, a woman. And I find that your novel, which won the Sue Sharon Prize,
yes.
Mo Sue Sharon Prize, and also the Bloody Scotland Debut Prize, shortlisted for it. Could you share with the audience what the novel is about? I've read it, so I know. And what led you to write it? Because women are the central characters, and you're, if I may call her the narrator in a way,
yes,
because
absolutely.
We see through her perspective, Hawa Barry.
Absolutely.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about what made you pick the story, the plot, and about the women characters?
Yeah, well, yes, absolutely, Bashabi, again, it was responding to themes. When I finished my degree, you'd enter quite a lot of competitions and there will always be a theme. So, for example, I remember entering the Mogford Prize, which is more or less had to be about food and drink. So when it came to this, the thinking, the most Sucheran Prize, I think the thinking is that ethnic minorities do not tend to write crime. And I think when you think about our history of literature, I think we are not burdened, but I think a lot of our literature tends to more or less look at big historical issues. Think slavery, think Jim Crow, think immigration, think Windrush, think more or less things like that. So the thinking was more or less at times we don't, for example, see many Black writers, for example, do crime or fantasy or children's books. So the call from the Mo Sue Sharon Prize was specifically for a crime novel. To be honest, I read quite a lot of crime as a kid. So I just had this idea about, it was something that happened in Edinburgh, actually, around 2007, a nurse who was abducted from her house in around about December, deep winter, Christmas time, and was locked in the boot of a car. And she was in there, I think, about 3 or 4 days. And the person who did it was actually from South Africa, a fellow called Justice Ngwema. Talk about irony. That was his name to do something to her. So I use that as a foundation point to create this novel about this kind of person who preys on women but locks them in the boots of their cars. And then, of course, I segued and connected that to more or less religion and the insidious nature of religion and things like that. So yes, fundamentally, because of the court case involved a woman, I just thought maybe I should use that and take it forward. So that's what I did.
We won't have spoilers, right?
No, okay. No spoilers.
I want people to read the novel because I was totally hooked.
Thank
from
you very
page
much.
One. I was just wondering about the title, The Search for Othello Savage,
yes,
the eponymous character. Do you want to say a little bit about your choice of the name and her role in the novel, which Howard Barry, sort of, who's her friend, then adopts the role of the sleuth.
Yes.
Kind of self-appointed.
Sleuth, you're trying to find a friend.
So, Othello Savage and the naming of her.
Yeah, very much, again, a lot of her experiences are my own experiences, in the sense that she was born in the UK, but then goes to Sierra and then comes back again. I've always just liked, of course, from Othello. I always quite liked a female Othello. I remember watching, it was a television show once, and there was an Othello character. I remember thinking that's a beautiful name to have, because it's someone, it symbolically represents so much, I think, talking about Black strength and things like that. So I use the name Othello, of course. And of course, when you think about it, she is very, even though she at times veers, again, no spoilers, veers into dark avenues, but fundamentally she is very socially conscious, she's very, very intelligent. Her mother lectures Black literature, for example, so she is very grounded in terms of more or less what is progressive politics, and actually very, very left wing. So I just thought more or less to use her as a kind of representation of this idea of, more or less, she has this idea that I want to empower women, I want to do something positive for these women living in Scotland. But again, things at times, the best intentions at times go askew. And that's exactly what happens to her. And of course, her friend is Howard Barry, who does not have the privilege, or was not born in Scotland, but comes here to study. And they're friends, of course, very, very close friends. So once Othello disappears, then Howard, of course, thinks, I have to go out of my way to find my friend, especially as another woman from within the same sphere has disappeared. So there's something quite dark and dastardly happening here. So of course, like you say, Howard becomes a sleuth who thinks, I have to do something to find my friend, particularly as the police, maybe because she's a woman of color, the police are maybe not as engaged as they should be. So it becomes a case of, she believes she has a unique perspective. This is not just a criminal act, but it's also to do with the culture. I am from this culture, ergo I should be able to provide a bit more perspective and a bit more context and a bit more help in terms of what's happening.
I think I was quite interested in Howard Barry being a Commonwealth scholar.
Yes,
very good. Yes. I mean, you have this very intellectual girl, but she's quite vulnerable as well,
because Absolutely, yes.
She needs the support of community.
Yes.
She needs a place to stay in which she can afford. And this is where there are two very different sets of characters. On the one hand, you have the women, and Annika Hart, who's American,
yes,
but Black American,
yes,
who wants to know more about her roots. And she's of course, she's a singer.
Yes.
And you were mentioning rap earlier.
Yes, exactly.
And,
yes.
I mean, this whole tradition of blues and jazz,
yes, exactly, yes,
is what has made the world what it is, you know, where we all identify with that rhythm that comes,
yes,
with the whole idea of,
yes,
Black poetry and Black music, if I can call it that.
Yes.
But there's Annika, this talented woman who's made it. And somehow she reminds me of Shug Avery.
Yes,
in
that's
the color
a beautiful
purple.
Comparison. Yes, it's a beautiful comparison.
The,
yes,
blues singer who then becomes protector for Celie in
The Color Purple.
Color Purple.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Would you like to say about your choice?
Yeah, but honestly, I've never thought, you said that that's a beautiful comparison. And when you think about it, absolutely, the parallels are very, very obvious, even though I'd never realized them. I just quite liked, I mean, many people read the book, and it's interesting even reading reviews online, and they speak of, it's almost as if they see Annika Hart almost as like a reader proxy, in the sense that when she asks Howard questions about Sierra Leone, it's an opportunity for the reader to learn about Sierra Leone. So when Howard explains to Annika, this is what happens, it's more or less explained to the reader where this is what happens. And when I wrote it, I never really thought about that. But yeah, I've always, music is, I think, is very, very essential to the story. I'm very much into blues and jazz, but much more, also much more modern forms like R&B and hip hop. So even when she meets Annika in the hotel room earlier on, that's what Annika says, that I have worked. I even created a whole musician called Malaika, who's totally not, she's not real at all. I remember one of the interviewers actually asking me that, that we'd gone online, we searched for this Malaika, we could never really find her. I'm like, no, I just made her up completely. Of course, you, Malaika, in, you know, thinking Arabic or Islam, is like an angel. So I just thought that's a beautiful name to have, this singer, and Anaka says that I worked with Malaika in the studio on beats. So Hawa, of course, finds this fascinating because she listens to Malaika and thinks, oh dear Lord, you actually worked with this pop star. So they, of course, develop a friendship. And then, of course, it becomes about hair, black hair. When she says, for example, are there any people in Edinburgh who do black hair? And she says, my friend does it. So there are all these links to more or less black culture and black things like that. And of course, at times, I think when you think about ethnic minorities, and you think about you and myself, you're from India, I'm from Sierra Leone. At times, we think we get lumped together. And I always talk to people that, no, even within India itself, I mean, you'll be able to tell me much better about Shabi, but there's so many strains of culture. And the same thing happens in Sierra Leone, where they speak, for example, like 17 different languages. So a black person from America and a black person from Africa might have skin color in common, but their cultural, more or less, vistas or what they more or less have is significantly different. And I thought it was interesting, important to more or less show that you have Anaka on one side who wants to know. And I think for a long time, it was actually very much in fashion for many people who were, for example, in America to try and connect to their roots. That became a thing. I think I mentioned in the novel that Oprah Winfrey does that, where they will get like a doctor to test your DNA and say, oh, well, yeah, Bashabi, even though you are from basically New Jersey, your ancestors came from the Democratic Republic of Congo. And everyone goes, yeah. So there was that kind of thing that happens there where she believes, well, actually, I am a sister, so I need to connect. So in meeting Hawa, it becomes an opportunity for her to, even though it's a crime novel, but it's also a chance to also look at culture and things like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, massive character. And of course, she sings. She sings when they go to karaoke joints in Edinburgh, but she also sings at the wedding in Sierra Leone. So there's a fascinating thread of her being more or less projecting or sharing a gift with people. Mm-hmm.
A gifted girl.
Gifted, yeah.
And you talk about Sierra Leone, and it's very important for you and for the reader to know that Sierra Leone has its own distinctive culture.
Yes.
But when Hawa is in Scotland, she is in a community within a community.
Yes, absolutely.
And community is very important, isn't it?
Absolutely.
In a novel,
yes.
In Sierra Leone. And this is where the very shady character of Pastor Ronald Ranka comes in.
Yes.
And the role of the church. Do you want to speak a little about your choice of the theme here?
Yes.
About the role of religion, of Sierra Leone culture, of community?
Yes, I think religion is intrinsic. I'm sure you know yourself, Bashabi. I think where we come from, religion is more or less absolute. Be it Islam, be it, for example, Sierra Leone is like 50-50 down the middle, where it's like half Christianity, half Islam. And my thinking growing up in Sierra Leone is that if you can harness that power, if you can convince people that I am a proxy to a higher power, that is significant power to wield. And that's what these pastors and preachers do. A lot of them are more or less snake oil salesmen. They are charlatans. There's no two ways about it. But they are able to convince people that I am speaking, I am here as a representative of God. Ergo, if you want something good, you need to come through me. And this ties directly, again, I'm sure you know about this, but it ties directly to women. Because I think a lot of the times in societies in general, women, especially where I come from, are always presented as being more or less defective in the sense that there's so many things that are considered to be stereotypical markers of validation when it comes to being a woman. For example, childbirth. Growing up in Sierra Leone, if you did not have a child, there was something wrong with you. You had to get married, but not just married, you had to get married to a good man. And a good man in our culture is more or less a rich man who could be abusive, who could be basically promiscuous. But once he has money, he's seen as a good man. And so I more or less took all these things and tied them together. A lot of, my late mother was a good example. She speaks of marrying my father in the 60s in Sierra Leone and not being able to get pregnant for 5 years. And she speaks about the mental trauma that they used to say to my father is called Fode, just like me. They used to say to my father that, Fode, you have married a fellow man. What that more or less meant was you have married a woman who cannot produce children, ergo she is a man. And my mother speaks, for example, about coming to the UK and getting pregnant. And her think it was maybe because there was no pressure on her that once she moved from Sierra Leone to here, she had 3 boys in London. And it's actually quite sad.
It doesn't say it.
It just happened. And even when she died, I mean, she died at 52. She died quite young. But
very young.
Very, very young. Yeah, I remember the funeral because, of course, her people were quite angry with my father because they broke up. But they kept saying that. In our culture, people, when they're angry, they say it aloud. And it was almost like them chanting, when you got married to this man, his people said that you were infertile. There was nothing good about you. But look what God did for you. You had three lovely boys. So these things stick in your mind about how women are represented. And I'm sure you know that yourself, Bashabi, where we come from, where you need exactly, you have to have a child otherwise. So it's actually quite sad the way women are treated. So that fundamentally means that women are more open to exploitation. Mm-hmm. You want a child, come to church. You want to go overseas, come to church. You want to get a good man, come to church. So the church therefore finds itself in a position to exploit these women, and that's what happens in the novel.
I think it's an exploration that takes the reader right through to a community where women are given a voice by you as a writer. So thank you for doing
that. Thank you very much. Mm.
I also want to look at the cultural association. Okay. I just want you to talk about. I was really taken up with the food.
Okay,
where people bring food to any community gathering.
Yeah, they do. Exactly.
They share. Yes. They have music. They dance. But you also bring recipes in. And,
yeah.
You know, so is there a place in Edinburgh or Glasgow where one?
I
could
think
have
it'd be Sierra Leone food? I don't know Sierra Leone, but I think African food. Yeah. Sierra Leone food definitely. I think there are. Women I know, or people I know, for example, I think I do that in the novel. There's a hairdresser in Glasgow who actually sells food also. So I know women who more or less do that unofficially. So, for example, you more or less put out a contract and say, I want you to make me, for example, cassava leaves. They cook it in the house and bring it to you. Or maybe even sell it in little bowls. That's what happens in the novel. That actually happens in Glasgow, where you can, for example, go to get your hair done, and then she also has bowls of cassava leaves that she sells to you, little subs, and says, I don't have money to more or less open a restaurant. That's beyond me, but I can run it from my house, whereby you tell people and I'll drive and deliver. So it's a very, very basic system. There's nothing complex about it. It's a cold kitchen, exactly, and that's what they do. And the same thing applies to functions. That's exactly what happens. My daughter, who was born there, she loves functions, Mandeepa. I think she likes the drama of the functions because even though she's black, she's very, very Scottish. So whenever we go, she laughs at, we are very different the way we... I think ethnic minorities from Asia and Africa interact with each other, and she finds it fascinating. We all bring food, and then it's a story, and everybody brings their kids. So, for example, it might be a graduation party, it might be a wedding party, it might be a christening party, but it's the same format. Everybody brings a dish, everybody gets dressed up, everybody's there, we dance, we sing, we celebrate, and everybody goes away again. So that is quite key in terms of diaspora, in the sense you have these thriving communities. Mm-hmm. And it's not just Sierra Leone. I'm sure that you know yourself, Indians and Senegalese and Gambians and Koreans, they all have these little clusters. Mm-hmm. And it's a fascinating thing that you come together, you celebrate, and everybody goes back to their life in the UK. You come together and celebrate. So that's what happens in the novel. There's a bit where she takes Annika to the party in Glasgow. And that's exactly it. And of course, the lady who has married a white man and has a big house says it to her. You need to come more. Edinburgh's not far to Glasgow. You need to come and see me a bit more. And things like that. And that's what ends up happening.
I can see the realism in your novel. You know, that's why food is so central to Sierra Leone, African, ethnic minority culture. And but I also was struck by the fact that when Hawa went back, she always went to... she went to meet her professor of black literature, who was Othello's mother
exactly.
And they speak about Alice Walker, Langston Hughes, and Toni Morrison. So are these writers who have inspired you?
Absolutely, yes, without a shadow of a doubt. It's a fascinating thing, I think, and I'm sure you know this. You're a professor of literature yourself, Bashar. You know this better than a
retired
professor, but you know this better than me. I think our degrees back in Africa and Asia are fascinating if you study an English degree, because you study everything. And that's what happens. So you do the English classics, you do Shakespeare and the drama of his age, you do metaphysical poetry, romantic poetry. But then, because of course we are black, we also have to do black literature. So that's more or less African literature, also Caribbean literature, but also African-American literature. So you study all the writers you mentioned, Alice Walker, Langston Hughes, also Lorraine Hansberry, A Raisin in the Sun, and Richard Wright, Black Boy, and Native Son, books like that. So I just thought to have a professor of black literature as Othello's mom, especially as she's very, very socially conscious, very intelligent, I thought that would be a good position for us to have. Of course, her father is dead. Her father went into politics and he dies. But the mother, I thought that would be another good example to have this very powerful figure very much like yourself, you know, this professor of, and I just thought, yeah, whenever she comes in, the way she speaks, and she has this whole aura about her, I thought that would be quite interesting. She is very much Othello's mother. Othello basically is cut from the same cloth as her mother. Intelligent, assured, very, very socially conscious, and understands how to make things happen. Yes.
And very intriguing too. Yes, so for the reader, that's very important.
Yeah, absolutely.
You
know,
you don't lay anything on a plate.
No.
Jode. It's always, you draw the reader in and you take them on a journey, and then things are sorted out slowly.
Yeah.
And I think you leave them very satisfied at the end. So what are you working on now?
Well, I've got a few things. Like I said, I have the Onision novel I wrote as part of my degree was based on our civil war. And like I said, I think I chatted to you a bit off air earlier on. It was to do with child soldiers, about I think how we classify child soldiers is quite problematic in our culture, especially. Again, it looks at gender in the sense that there are lots of rehabilitation programs, United Nations, World Bank, pumping money into children to more or less rehabilitate these children who have been traumatized by war. But when we think about child soldiers, the classification is actually very, very much exclusively boys. And I think we struggle in society to categorize girls affected by conflict. So the story, more or less, it's an interesting story because initially when I started to write it, the thinking was to have a street boy who pretends to be a child soldier to gain access to this center that has electricity and running water and food. But midway through the story, I remember thinking, there's a bit where girls get admitted. And I thought to myself, Bashabi, well, actually, the story is not the boy anymore. The story is actually the girls. So I remember taking it back and rewriting it and more or less starting it at the front and saying, no, no, no. The real story here is not the boy. The real story is the girls who come to the center. And of course, they're faced with all kinds of prejudice and discrimination in the sense that, for example, you think about a lot of them have more, for example, suffered rape during the war, but that seems as a stigma against them. In other words, oh, you're defiled, you're unclean, you're dirty, you shouldn't be here. There's something wrong with you. So it's a more or less this dynamic about how, and that's war, but that's society in general. I think society is incredibly, you don't need me to tell you, I mean, you're a woman of color yourself, Bashabi, but yeah, I think society is incredibly discriminatory when it comes to women, especially women of color, and even when you talk about kids. So even when you talk about rehabilitation, boys, but what about the girls? So that's more or less what I've been looking at. I'm also thinking, I'm a dance dad, or as a dance dad. Right up to COVID, my daughter used to dance. Again, when you think about gender, that was a fascinating job. I took her to dancing just because I was a teacher, which meant I was free on the weekends. But whenever I would get there, it would be me with all these moms. So that's a fascinating dynamic. Few dads, very, very few dads, but predominantly, it should not be a gender task. You're literally in a car, drop off, pick up. But what does society do? It has to be. There's even a program called Dance Moms on television. And it's all these moms shouting at each other. So I also thought that would be quite a good thing to explore. Not just a man, but a man of color amongst all these women. And they were lovely to me. They used to take care of me, so that was quite good. They were lovely to me. But it was a fascinating thing, me and Mandeepa going to Blackpool and Liverpool, because we used to travel far to Dundee and Aberdeen for dancing. Just you and the child in the car, you go all the way. And it's everything in costumes and changes and jewelry and what you have to do. Well, it was a fascinating life. And I think, yeah, there's something there, I think, worth pursuing in literature. I think that'll be quite good to look at.
Exploding the stereotype.
Yes, exactly.
And that's what you do. So it's been wonderful having you.
Thank you very much.
Manner, author of The Search for Othello Savage. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
In conversation for Writers Mosaic.
Thank you so
and
much.
And I look forward to your two books, one on dancing, one on
no pressure.
Girl soldiers, and No Pressure.
Fode Manna was in conversation with Bashabi Fraser. To hear more writers, go to writersmosaic.org.uk.